What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition. This is episode 24. We're going to be talking about the carnivore diet and specifically some of the athletic benefits that it provides. But first, let's do a little check-in. So, Tom, how's everything going?
Everything's been going pretty good. Still doing this carnivore diet. One thing I don't think I mentioned when I first started this carnivore diet is I decided to put my dogs on the carnivore diet as well. I'm just, you know, thinking if I don't need to eat vegetables for a couple of weeks, I'm sure my dogs can get away with it as well. And yeah, like just been giving them fatty cuts of meat, lots of organ meats as well. And they seem to be losing quite a little bit of weight. I mean, they're both 25 pounds roughly to begin with. So I think they've dropped a pound or two. I can just kind of see it in their ribs or midsection a little bit. They seem to be doing pretty good on it. One dietary or one, I guess, side effect, I don't know really what to call it, is their stool was coming out a little loose, but after a week or two, it started to, you know, normal. It's coming out normal again. And I noticed the same thing. It took me about a week or two to go from, like, having loose stools from that. I'm guessing from the lack of fiber, but my body seemed to adapt to that relatively quick. So after that change, like, everything's been going pretty good. Me and my dogs are loving this new carnivore diet.
Nice. So everything's on track.
Yeah. Can't complain. Been loving it, getting a lot of good workouts in. Honestly, like, the hardest part is just standing still.
Right. So much energy.
Yep. Well, what's new with you?
Yeah. I mean, I want to comment on that a little bit. There's something... I mean, I genuinely believe words have power. So when people hear me talk, I always say, like, you know, I don't get tired. Like, if there's anything I need to do, I can do it. Like, I always try and talk that way. Like, I try and think that way because I feel like it helps me accomplish the goals that I have. But genuinely, the way I eat, and now you're experiencing that, I really don't get tired. If there's something I need to get done in the day, it's going to get done. Like, I don't get home and, like, lay on the couch and, like, oh, I'm tired. It's like, no, I got stuff to do and I have the energy to do it. And it's another great benefit of the way we eat, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like my sleeping requirements have kind of decreased a little bit. Like, I'll get 5-6 hours of sleep some nights.
And I feel fine. And wake up.
Yeah. Normally, I'll be like, okay, drag my ass, get that cup of coffee in me, let that, you know, ride out for the next few hours. As soon as I get home from work, then I'll take a little nap. But yeah, I've been taking a lot less naps, getting away with, you know, 5-6 hours of sleep at night, and been doing great off of it. If I am a little tired, yeah, I'll take a nap here or there, but I haven't really been needing them. And yeah, I'll go to the gym, have a great gym workout, come home, shower, eat, and then it's like, you know what? I can work out again. I'm having to hold myself back because I don't want to, like, you know, overdo it. Mm-hmm. But I have the energy. The drive's there. I just got to... I don't know. It's been a while. I haven't felt like this since I was like 18.
Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you, man, we're aging in reverse. I'm telling you, man, welcome to the tribe. I love it, man. I'm really happy to hear that.
But yeah, I really didn't believe half of the shit you were saying. It's like, oh, this fool's this crazy.
I wasn't lying, man. I wasn't. Yeah.
I'm really surprised because I was already...
pretty good.
Yeah, I was most of the way there and almost carnivore anyway. I mean, I was eating... maybe an avocado here and there. You know, I'll have like a zucchini and some mushrooms like with my dinner. And, you know, like that's kind of like what I cut out. It's not like I'm cutting out rice or, you know, bread.
Ice cream.
I didn't make any major dietary changes, but seems to be working pretty well.
It's a trip. Yeah. As far as with me this week, officially I want to announce I am done dieting. Officially.
Is it Christmas?
It's not Christmas. It is about 2 weeks to Christmas, and I don't give a shit. So, I don't know, man. Actually, I don't know.
Go we ahead. Should clarify. I think this podcast is going to come out on Christmas. Or no, this will still come out before Christmas,
It'll come out before Christmas. Yeah, it will.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's... something happened. Like, you know, I did my little... diet to Thanksgiving, which was 8 weeks, calorie restricted, workouts through the roof, hardcore, and I did that no problems, no cheats, no misses. I didn't miss a meal, I didn't miss a training session at all, and I felt so good on Thanksgiving, I decided I was going to run into Christmas, and I haven't, it's not like I've cheated the past few weeks or I've, like, stumbled. I just had a real hard time. Because there's no, when you're dieting, hunger is a way of life when you're dieting. You just have these hunger cues and you have to resist them. And I've just found it very hard the past few days. Maybe like, started like 3 days ago when I got hungry. Like, I just didn't give a shit. I was like, man, I just want to eat and I don't care if it's going to, like, affect my abs. I don't care if I'm going to be less vascular, you know?
Yeah, and especially when you don't really have, like, the motivation of, hey, in 2 weeks I have a show, mm-hmm. or I have this competition to kind of, like, push you through mentally. So, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, I just ran out, and I was kind of thinking prior to this cut, about 4 weeks before, I went to, like, my brother, like I went to my brother's for kind of, like, a little family reunion, so all, like, my siblings were there. And for that little gathering, I did a 4 week prep for that just on my own. So it was 4 weeks of clean eating and like no cheat meals, nothing like that. So I did 4 weeks of clean eating and then I had one cheat meal. And then I did 8 weeks of dieting to Thanksgiving. And then I had a few cheat meals like post Thanksgiving, like 2 or 3 days of cheat meals. And then I went right back into it. So all in all, it was maybe like 14 weeks. Of, like, hardcore, strict dieting, no cheat meals. And I feel like that's where my, like, willpower, like, ran out. Like, I just don't have nothing left, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, like, dietary willpower is at, like, an all-time low right now. We got, not to mention, all the great holiday foods that are coming in. And then you just got everybody just waiting to start their new diet in a couple weeks, like, once that new year hits. So I just feel like there's very, very few people that are caring about, like, what they're eating right now.
I know. Yeah, and every time I leave to go somewhere, like, go to the grocery store, I'm in, like, long sleeves, I'm in jackets. Like, no one gives a shit, you know?
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter, like, how ripped you are when you're wearing, like, 4 layers of clothing.
Exactly.
Everybody looks the same.
Yeah, everyone looks all soft. But, so that happened.
I did want to comment, like, not every diet is going to be miserable. It's just if you're trying to do, like, a cut like you're doing, like a restrictive... what was that, protein sparing modified fast?
Yeah,
and that didn't seem like it was too bad for the first few weeks. It just seems like that's just not something that you could survive off of for how long did you end up doing it overall? 8 weeks?
Yeah, it was 8 weeks for Thanksgiving, and then the past 2 weeks, so it was about like 10 weeks total of hardcore.
Yeah, so I think you just kind of like ran the course, because I mean, you do need fat. Or you need carbs. You need one or the other for energy.
Yeah, it was just... That was it. Yeah, I just ran. And I could totally feel it. Like, I can't... And it's mental. It's not a physical thing. Like, I feel fine. I'm not tired. I'm not weak. Like, I can train just fine. But it's those moments where I want to eat something. Like, mentally, I can't fight that anymore. Like I said before, like, mentally, it's just done.
Yeah, I mean, like, your body's telling you something.
Yeah, so I'm listening to it, and so I made the adjustment. I started this a few days ago. I'm introducing 2 pounds of 80-20 ground beef post-workout now. So I'm doing that, which that is maybe an extra 2,200-2,300 calories. And then I'm still having like about 10 to 12 ounces of heart 2 more times throughout the day. So my calories now are a little over 3,000. Which is damn near double what it was. I just kind of want to reintroduce these extra calories kind of slowly. Like, I don't want to go from super restricted to, like, 10,000 a day. I'll see how that goes. I think I'm going to keep this little routine until Christmas and just be lax. Like, if I want to go out and have dinner somewhere, I'm going to go. If I want to have whatever, some eggnog, I'm going to have it. Like, I'm not going to really worry too much.
I mean, honestly, like, this is the time of year to not be very restrictive. I'm kind of regretting a little bit picking this carnivore diet this time of year.
Because all the holidays, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a good thing, too, just because it's like, hey, you know, I really don't want to eat that lasagna, and I don't want to be an asshole. So, but, like, now it's like, oh, hey, I'm on this diet. I can't eat it. There's other things in there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of good from that standpoint. But then again, like, if I go and my friend's wife just made, you know, some homemade cookies that she makes once a year, you know, I kind of want to try those.
Yeah, that's when it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And besides that, I guess everything's going good. Just ready to get this podcast going, because, you know, I love to talk about the benefits of carnivore and that's what this podcast is all about.
All right. So, yeah, let me just do a quick little, like, just review of what a carnivore diet is. We're going to define it as, like, 90% or more of your calories coming from animals or animal products. You know, your meats, butter, ghee, bone broth, anything else you could think of to add to that? I mean, I'm allowing seasonings, salt, pepper, I think garlic powder and stuff like that's okay. Only because, like, without those, just having salt and steak every single night for dinner, yeah, I'm going to get over that diet real quick. So I need some flavoring in my life. That's the only reason I'm allowing seasonings is just to keep this, you know, sustainable.
Yeah, no, I think seasonings definitely, they fall into that other 10% category of the extra stuff you can have. But yeah, I think seasonings are fine on a carnivore diet. I know some people are really strict and some people consider carnivore just like damn near just muscle meat. But that's not where I fall into it.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to describe it. Yeah, I'm not counting, you know, if I go and get some like chicken wings smothered in barbecue sauce. Like, no, I'm not really saying that's carnivore. But, you know, if you have some, you have a steak, you throw some garlic powder, some salt, pepper, maybe some turmeric on there as well. I think that's perfectly fine. Those are completely different things. You're getting a couple calories. You probably can't even count the amount of calories on one hand from all the seasonings, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
So some of the benefits that you're going to get from just a carnivore diet, this is just for everybody. You're going to get both essential fatty acids, so your omega-3s and your omega-6s. And depending on the animal source, if you're getting it from good animal sources, you know, your grass-fed beefs, your pasture-raised eggs, your wild-caught fish, that type of thing, you're going to get those in a really good ratio, 1-to-1, 2-to-1 ratio. If you do eat some of the like the conventional beef, maybe the farm-raised fish, conventional chicken eggs, that ratio is going to be off a little bit, but it's still going to be pretty ideal. It's not like you're out there consuming a shit ton of vegetable oils that are almost all omega-6s and no omega-3s. So, like, that ratio is still going to be between that 1-to-1 to 4-to-1 ratio where we want it, not that 20-to-1 ratio where it's going to be on, like, with most standard American diets.
Yeah, if you're really worried about the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio and you're on a carnivore diet, then I would stay away from factory-raised chicken and pork. Both of those are going to have higher omega-6s than any sort of beef or any sort of ruminant flesh. But even in those cases, it's not nearly as high as it would be from a standard American diet, so I think you're fine. But if you really are worried about that, go for a grass-fed ruminant. They're going to be honestly low in omega-3s and low in omega-6, so the ratio is going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, and honestly, it's really hard to know exactly what you're getting from those animals too, just because they're all raised on different parts of the planet, eating different diets throughout different times of the year. So you're really never going to know what omega-3 to omega-6 ratio you're getting, but you can have a pretty good idea, especially if it's just coming, if you're just getting it all from eggs, meat, dairy, it's going to be close enough to that ideal range.
Yeah. And another benefit, I guess, is just to mention the omega-3s that really matter, EPA and DHA, those are the omega-3s that actually perform all the critical functions in our body. You can only get those from animal sources. There is an omega-3 in plant, it's ALA. And I'm not going to pronounce these long-ass words, but you can just Google them. Google fatty acid ALA and you'll find it. Our body converts that very poorly. So some of us don't convert it at all. It's 0%. And some of us convert it at max 9%, which is actually not that good. We can convert ALA to EPA and DHA. So the best way to get those omega-3 fats is to not rely on a vegetable source. It's just to get them directly from an animal source. So that's just another benefit of the carnivore plan.
You know, this question just popped up in my head. I didn't bother looking it up. Maybe you know it. So you know like those I'm guessing they're omega-3s eggs that you see? Like the chickens are fed a lot of flaxseed. Yeah. And it supposedly increases the omega-3 content in the eggs.
Yeah.
Is that true? Or is it going to be in an EPA or DHA form?
I believe it. I know they feed them flaxseed, and I did look into this, and I believe the omega-3 that they actually get in their eggs is in the ALA form. So you're still getting ALA form omega-3s. It's not actually EPA and DHA.
Oh, so the chicken isn't being a machine and turning that ALA into EPA for us?
No, I don't think they don't convert that very well in EPA or DHA either. So okay. Technically you are getting more omega-3s, but it's the omega-3 that we really can't convert, so what's the point?
Okay. I've never spent the extra money on it. I always just felt like chickens don't eat flaxseed normally, so I don't know why that would be beneficial.
Yeah, I did look into that, and it's deceptive. It's kind of deceptive marketing.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I always looked at it. I was like, I can kind of see why this is a good thing, but I don't see why feeding chickens something that's not part of their natural diet is a good thing. So I've always steered away, especially because it costs more.
Yeah, smart.
All right, so moving on. Another benefit of this is you're getting all your amino acids. So there's 20 amino acids. You're going to get all of them through meat. And then most importantly, you have 9 essential amino acids. Those are amino acids that you can only get through meat or only get through food, and you're going to get all of them in meat. So you don't have to worry about pairing something like spinach with almonds or pairing something like rice and beans to get all your amino acids in one source. You just eat an egg and you don't have to worry about it. Simple.
Yeah, very simple. And there is something that a lot of people, especially vegetarians, won't really talk about. There's a whole list of conditionally essential amino acids. And I believe it's around 9 amino acids. It's arginine, glycine, proline, glutamine, tyrosine, serine, cysteine, and taurine. So it's 8 amino acids. They're conditionally essential. And what that means is our body can make them, but it only makes them in ideal situations. So it needs a bunch of precursors and cofactors and a human that's healthy and functioning properly and has a good diet. Then it can actually produce these amino acids. But how many of us out there are like that? You know, we live in a world where everyone's deficient. Everyone is and under some sort of strain. You know what I mean? Whether it's a stressful life, a shitty diet, a shitty job, they don't work out, something like that. So these amino acids should also be included in the essential list. We should get them from our diet if we want to live optimally. And all those amino acids I just said are in meat as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, how many of us are either workout warriors? I mean, especially if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you're living a relatively healthy lifestyle. So you're probably exercising kind of regularly. Hey, you're going to have increased demands for this type for proteins and amino acids. If you live in America or just pretty much in the world nowadays, you're living in a toxic environment. The water that we drink, the air that we breathe, there's just so much that are sitting us out of our homeostasis that, yeah, we need, nothing's really functioning properly anymore. So yeah, I'm willing to bet most of those conditionally essential amino acids are basically essential amino acids.
Exactly. And you wanted to touch on methionine, right? Being kind of a limiting factor in a lot of plant-based proteins.
Yeah, so that's the big one. I mean, that's mostly going to be coming from vegetables. It's not all plant sources that are lacking in methionine, but mostly just vegetables. So methionine is an essential amino acid. So you can find that in eggs, fish, pretty much any sort of meat, but mostly in those two. And it's very important because it's one of only 2 amino acids that contain sulfur. And the reason that that's important is the other amino acid is cysteine, which is one of those conditional essential amino acids. So the only way that your body can make cysteine is if it has methionine. And another amino acid that goes along with that is taurine. So if you're lacking methionine, there's a very good chance you have a deficiency in cysteine and taurine as well. So that's, you have 1 deficiency, translates into 3 deficiencies.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why this stuff's all connected. It's like a big spider web.
Yeah. You know, this is one thing that kills me when I talk to people about like the human body. It's that A equals B equals C. But no, it's never that simple. It's never just one straight line. Like one thing does one, and then that has a cascading effect that we just have no idea how far down the effect goes. Like you don't eat a lot of meat, you don't have a lot of methionine, now you don't have a lot of cysteine, now you don't have a lot of taurine. That's 3 issues from, you know, just one cause. So yeah, like why methionine is so important is it's a precursor to producing glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. So this is very important in just dealing with all the hydrogen ions that are going to accumulate with exercise or just basically with energy production in general. you need these antioxidants in your body to deal with the increased pH values and just to keep everything running efficiently.
Yeah, so antioxidants, especially glutathione, we talked about aging and mitochondria being the biggest source of endogenous free radical production. Like, our mitochondria produce the most free radicals in our body. Antioxidants are the things that clear up that damage and pretty much keep us younger longer.
And another thing with glutathione, I'm sure most of our adult listeners out there have felt hungover at one point. A lot of that is just because we're very low in glutathione at that point, because we're using it up to deal with all the alcohol that we just ingested. So our glutathione values are really low. That's part of the reason that we just feel like shit after we do a heavy night of drinking. So, like, when you're craving food the next morning, you're usually craving something that's going to be, I don't know, like a cheeseburger, something that's going to have a lot of meat in it, a fatty cut of meat that's going to allow your body to produce more glutathione, get that glutathione level up, and you'll start feeling better. That hangover cure goes away. That's why there is no just hangover cure. Like, you need the time. You need to put something, a precursor in your body, preferably some fatty cut of meat. Let your body turn that into glutathione. Your glutathione levels go up. Now you're feeling better. Hangover's gone.
Yeah, you know, I guess we didn't talk about this, but it's a good transition. If I wanted to go kill myself, I can go take, you know, a handful of Advil. And we know that kills our liver. Those non-steroid anti-inflammatories. You know how that destroys your liver?
I know methionine is a very protective factor in that liver toxicity that you're just discussing.
Yeah, it depletes our liver of glutathione. So same thing with alcohol. When someone goes to that hospital and they've pretty much killed themselves drinking alcohol, they'll give them a glutathione like drip. They'll replace that. That's how they kind of bring people back from taking too much Advil or drinking a bunch of alcohol. They have to replace that glutathione. That's what they do.
Oh, I did not know that you could administer that through an IV. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I know that there were, I know they exist in Vegas where there's like these little buses they drive around. And they'll, like, pick you up for, like, an hour at a time, and you just pay them money. You get hooked up to an IV. You go in hungover as shit. You walk out feeling like you're LeBron James.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a new business that's popped up. I don't know if that's – I'm sure it's probably in places like L.A. and Miami by now, but I know that exists in Vegas.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I figured it was just, like, placebo effect mostly. But, yeah, if it does have glutathione, then there probably really is a good value in that. Learning something new every day.
There you go.
All right, so we were talking about methionine.
Yeah.
All right, so the glutathione and the antioxidant effect, yes, this is supposed to be about athletic benefits. So if you want to recover, you want antioxidants. Those are very, very important to have your body recover from exercise. If you don't have a lot of antioxidants with you, when you work out, you're putting your body through a lot of stress. Your body's weaker as a result of that one immediate workout. If you don't have a lot of antioxidants, you're just opening yourself up to get sick, get injured, any of these other things. So you want antioxidants around, lower that inflammation, and just help your body just run optimally throughout the day. And there's one other thing that methionine does. It adds a methyl group to DNA, which is basically a fancy way of saying that it just activates your DNA, allowing it to change. So that can sound a little scary, but what you're doing when you're working out is sending signals to your DNA to change. So I don't want to go to the gym, lift a bunch of heavy weights, and then have no changes occur because of that. And then go to the gym, kill myself in the gym again, pushing the same weights, doing that for 10 years with no changes. You want your DNA to change. You want your DNA to tell you, oh, hey, I need to be bigger and stronger, or I need to be smaller and faster. You need your DNA. You want your DNA to receive these signals so your body can go through these adaptations. If not, you're just going to work yourself in the gym all the time, going nowhere.
Yeah, that's a great point. And if you ever hear that term, like, to methylate something, you can just think of it as to activate it, to turn it on. That's a good, like, synonym.
Yeah, turn it on. Make something usable, something like that, you know, changing, converting something into a usable form.
You see that with B vitamins. So a lot of people, I know especially some of our clients, will put them on a B12 supplement, and usually we'll put them on a methyl B12 supplement, and that's mainly because a lot of people lack the gene to methylate B12, and like I said prior, you can think of methylating B12 as just turning it on. So if you don't have that gene to do that, or you're just not good at methylating things, again, maybe you're deficient in methionine or you have other deficiencies going on, if you supplement with something that's already methylated, your body doesn't have to do it. It can just absorb it as is. So it's just more bioavailable in that form.
Yeah, and a lot of factors go into somebody's ability to methylate. Mostly it's just going to depend on like where you're from. Like where your parents are from, where your ancestors were from. Did your ancestors eat a bunch of fruits and vegetables? Did they eat nothing but animals? Like, what did they eat? Because what they eat is going to impact the way you're able to eat, pretty much. So the main benefits I thought that I was going to see when I went on this carnivore diet, and maybe this is where I'm seeing most of the benefits, is it's essentially just an elimination diet where you're eliminating anything that could possibly give you problems. So this is a very hypoallergenic type of diet. So there's really nothing on a carnivore diet that should give you any issues unless you're, you know, lactose intolerant or have some other sensitivity with dairy, or you have issues with eggs or shellfish. But personally, the only time I have problems with eggs is if I'm eating something else that's causing me problems. Because 350 days out of the year, eggs are my favorite meal. But there's just a few days every now and then that they just, I don't know, cause me a little bit of gastric distress. And I'm just assuming it's something that I ate either the day before or maybe that same day that's causing me to have a little bit of, I don't want to say like full-on leaky gut, but probably just like a slight case of leaky gut. And that's what's causing those issues. So yeah, just, you know, you're eating something else that's giving you problems. So you're eliminating all that. No anti-nutrients, no lectins, no gluten.
Because all those anti-nutrients, they're, people think, you know, plants are chilling out there in the field that they don't have, you know, built-in defense mechanisms. You know, they can't move, they don't have claws, but they do. And those anti-nutrients are the defense mechanisms, you know, so people or creatures, you know, won't eat them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that trees grow fruit way up high. Like, that's a physical defense so that small animals can't eat them. And then when they're all the way up there, mostly just insects and birds can eat them, relatively small animals. So the anti-nutrients are going to have a pretty big impact if you're like a 1-inch, you know, caterpillar or, you know, like a little 2-pound sparrow. But if you're a 250-pound, a fully grown human adult, you're not going to get the same gastric issues. But they're still happening. You're just not feeling them as strong.
Exactly. That's why years and years the standard American diet leads to these problems, and you see people in their 50s and 60s like, oh, I ate healthy my whole life, I don't know why I have these issues. It's because it takes time. It's a cumulative effect of all these little, you know, tears and all these little, I don't know what to call them, I guess just attacks caused by these foods.
Yeah, just the stress. And you're like, similar with exercise, stress is good for you, just not all the time. Like, now we're just introducing ourselves to a level of chronic stress that we were just never meant to handle. So there's anti-nutrients in pretty much every single vegetable, almost every single plant source out there. There's going to be some sort of anti-nutrient. But our ancestors didn't have to deal with those anti-nutrients 12 months out of the year. They would eat, oh, hey, blueberries. I got blueberries for a month. That plant's done producing. Got that 1 month of blueberries. And then that's it. You have that impact for 1 month, not 12 months out of the year. That's where the difference is. Like, yeah, we can handle the stresses. We just can't handle the stresses for 12 months.
Yes, exactly. For 40-plus years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another benefit of the carnivore diet, is just the whole elimination diet aspect to it.
Yeah, and then also, this is going to be a ketogenic diet, something that we've discussed in the past. Any sort of diet that's going to reduce your carb intake greatly is going to put you in a level of ketosis. So yeah, that's where you're just going to be burning primarily fat for fuel. Even you doing your protein sparing modified fast, where it's just mostly protein. I don't know if you did any testing, but I'm willing to bet you were in ketosis damn near the entire time.
Oh, I bet I was. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you test at all?
No, I don't care. Even if I wasn't, I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, I can't see why you wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's another benefit is just you're going to be on a any sort of low-carb diet that's this low-carb is going to put you in a state of ketosis. So you're going to get all the benefits of the ketogenic diet. So increased ketone levels, that's basically your body's just tapping into damn near unlimited fuel source. But you'll run out of fuel in weeks or months, not hours or minutes, like you would off of glucose.
Yeah, it's almost like our body was designed to run on fat, huh?
You know, like my college education and all the stuff that, you know, society teaches me wants to teach me the complete opposite. So I don't know. I don't know really who to believe.
Yeah, just look in the mirror. Tell me how much carbs you got in you and how much fat you got in you, okay?
I'm still waiting to start gaining weight or start putting on fat from eating so much fat. I've been waiting for like 3 years to start getting fat, and it, you know, it hasn't happened.
Hasn't happened yet, yeah.
I've been eating over 50% fat for quite a while.
Yeah, now you're leaner and healthier than you ever been.
Yeah, that's not why I went on this diet. You know, I was like, oh, ketogenic diet's an easy way to get 4,000 calories in a day. Oh, that should help me put on some weight. Nope. Still waiting.
No weight. You want to talk about, I guess, the role of protein with a carnivore diet?
Yeah, so with a carnivore diet, since you are eliminating carbs pretty much completely, you're going to be eating more fat and more protein. That's just kind of what you have to do. Mostly, I'm just basing a lot of this off of just my diet and your diet. There's not a whole lot of amazing studies, like long-term studies, involving the carnivore diet and athletic benefits. So a lot of this stuff we're just kind of speculating on, but that's based off of a lot of our other previous research and just me and your own personal experience. My major theory of why the carnivore diet is good for athletic performance is that you just have so much protein. So protein serves so many functions in the body. It makes up a lot of stuff. So like carbs and fats, those are used as energy. But when you actually need to rebuild your tissue, you're rebuilding your tissue with protein. So like new muscle fibers, protein. Your enzymes, you know, anything that, any sort of change that's going to happen in your body. Any sort of function, those are proteins. Some hormones are proteins. Like, there's just the amount of functions that proteins have is just too long to list. Like, I'll be doing that all day on this podcast.
Yeah.
So proteins, they do a lot. And you can just think of proteins, like, those are words, but amino acids are letters. So in order for us to, like, write a paragraph, you know, to form words, we need to have all the letters. So for us to function properly, we need to, or for us to have a flowing sentence, something like I can't do right now, we need to have all the words and we need to have all the appropriate letters that go along with it. So if we don't have all the appropriate letters, like let's say we're missing out on methionine, an amino acid, now not only can we not use functions that need methionine, like creating glutathione, now we're also low in taurine because we can't produce taurine, or we can't produce cysteine as well. So that's three problems that can rise from just having one little deficiency. So like that's why I'm trying to say, like, you can use, like, from having all these proteins and all these amino acids, all these, the limiting factor isn't going to be the proteins or the enzymes. It's going to be some outside source. So you're just oversaturating your body with all the proteins and all the amino acids that it could possibly use.
Yeah, protein for the win again. Protein's awesome, man. The more protein, the better. Don't be scared to increase your protein.
You know, what's really funny is while I'm doing this, a couple studies pop up. Hey, protein can be linked to this. But every time I came across one of those studies, I came across protein has no effect on this. So there is some, most of the studies that are showing protein has bad effects on your kidneys or on cancer are completely misguided, I guess would be the best word. And they're making a huge leap of faith from either animal models to humans, or it's just somebody who just did some questionnaire filling out what they ate for the last 3 years. And they're just making another leap of faith, translating that into the way that functions work in the body. And there's really no clear mechanism or like proof that increased protein is going to cause you to get cancer, cause your kidneys to fail, anything like that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know I get this question a lot because on some of my refeed days, I had grams. I mean, my protein for the day was around, I think, 600. I might even have 700 grams on one of my days. And if someone hears about that, they always think about my kidneys. But protein does not hurt your kidneys. It doesn't. There's been plenty of studies out there that show that it doesn't. And there's been one or two studies back in the day that showed on, I think it's males, specifically on dialysis, like a very compromised group. And a very, even a subsection of that compromised group had some sort of, like one or two, some had some harm with excess protein. And it kind of like that idea perpetuated and kind of people ran with this. Like, oh, so protein hurts your kidneys. But protein is not what caused these people to be on dialysis. You know what I mean? Like, so why are you blaming protein? It's just not a fair assessment.
Well, I think it's just because we don't want to point the finger at the real culprit with that, which is sugar. We, for whatever reason, our country can't blame sugar for anything.
I know. Even though
everybody knows that sugar is bad for you. I don't think there's anybody out there that's like really saying like, hey, sugar's the fucking shit. We need to be eating more sugar. But we've had the hardest time saying sugar is what's responsible for diabetes. Sugar is what's responsible for kidney failure. Heart disease, obesity, like, they're all the same things. They're all just problems of just civilization that have occurred once we started eating a shit ton more sugar.
Yep.
Because I know I've brought up some of those points with you with protein, like with your 700 protein days. But my thinking on it has always been more of, there's probably some sort of function that we just don't understand yet. So maybe too much protein could be an issue. But me, mostly, I'm just thinking, if you have too much protein, you're probably going to pee it out, because that's what we do when we have too much most things, unless it's, you know, something that's actually bad for you. So, yeah. Like, I'm worst case scenario, I'm assuming you're just going to pee it out.
Yeah, I'm not saying your body's actually going to use 700 grams. I'm just saying that 700 grams is not going to hurt you. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would mostly agree with that. I haven't seen any science, any conclusive science to disagree with that.
Yeah.
And especially if you're not doing 700 per day, like if you're doing that as a refeed day, that's a completely different scenario.
It is, yeah. It's a unique scenario. And I don't know if I could eat 700 a day every day. That would be a feat. But
Yeah,
exactly. Once in a while, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, and that's coming from a day, probably the day before, where you were either fasting or low protein.
Depleted, so
it's
yeah.
Like, yeah, like you're not comparing, it's like you wouldn't eat that way for every day either. So yeah, it's not a accurate comparison.
No, it's not, yeah. Well, I know for this podcast, one of the major things, because we wanted to talk about athletic benefits with carnivore, we were just kind of going over before some of what carnivore is and the benefits of the increased protein, but there is a nutrient in meat that you cannot get in plants that is beneficial to your athletic performance, and that's carnosine. So carnosine is a dipeptide. It's a bond between the amino acid beta-alanine and histine. And like I said, it's only found in animal products, mainly in muscle meat. So if you're eating like a ribeye or a New York steak, you'll get a lot of carnosine in that. In our own bodies, it's mainly found in the skeletal muscle as well. But it's also found in areas where a lot of energy is needed. So you can think the brain and the heart. So two locations where we need a lot of energy all the time. Usually, if you're going to supplement with carnosine, they'll say supplement with maybe 1,000 milligrams a day. Like, you'll see, if you go to, like, GNC or even, like, online, you search on Amazon, you'll see carnosine as a supplement. But if you're a meat eater, and especially if you're a carnivore and you eat, you know, pounds and pounds of meat a day, you are already supplementing with carnosine. So, just a few examples. In turkey, seems to be the highest amount. So in a turkey breast, you get about 530 milligrams per 100 grams. And I did the conversion. That's about 2,400 milligrams per pound. For pork, it's about 2 grams per pound. And for beef, it's about 1.7 grams per pound. And so you think someone like me eating anywhere from 3 to 6 pounds of meat a day, I'm supplementing with maybe 12 grams of carnosine a day.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, that's something that I didn't even talk about is you are pretty much, by being on a high protein, this carnivore diet, you are supplementing with a lot of amino acids, carnosine being one of the main ones. I do have a quick question for you. Do you know when vegetarians, when they supplement with carnosine, do you know the source of it?
No, I don't.
Okay. Like, I wonder how, how they can get around that. If it's only in animal sources.
Well, you can synthesize it from the amino acids, from beta-alanine and histidine.
Okay.
So I assume that's how they do it.
Some little science experiment?
Yeah. But I know in, like, strict vegetarians, so people who don't consume meat, they tend to have less carnosine in their body.
Okay. Have you ever supplemented with beta-alanine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have.
How do you feel about it? I've heard a lot of mixed things.
It made me kind of tingly.
Yeah, that's one of the main things I've heard.
What's that word? You know what that word is?
You know, I was going to just say, like, tingling. Like,
yeah,
you...
it is a word, though. I forget.
I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that word.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, like, you have a little tingling feeling, but, like, you basically just feel like you just... you're on some sort of drug. Like, you just have so much energy. It's kind of like a uncomfortable amount of energy. It's the way I've heard most people describe it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I have. So, I honestly, all I remember is the tingling feeling and not liking it. And the more I looked into just this spot, this podcast specifically, and, like, carnosine and the benefits of carnosine, a lot of the benefits of carnosine are based on beta-alanine research. Because beta-alanine is kind of, it's hot right now on the supplement market. Or at least it was a few years ago. I'm not quite sure anymore. Specifically today, maybe it's not. But beta-alanine is kind of, like I said, it's a precursor to carnosine. So we talked earlier about, like, methylating as far as being an activator. So you could think of carnosine as being the active form of beta-alanine. So all you're doing when you supplement with beta-alanine is giving your body more of a substrate to make carnosine. So carnosine is the real benefit to it. And the reason or the action how carnosine works is it acts as a buffer in our muscles, allowing us to train harder for longer. So just think, if you're a dedicated trainer, you've been working out for 10 years, if you get one or two extra reps per set, for each individual workout, that may not seem like a big deal, but over 10 years, that really can benefit you and stimulate more growth.
Well, I mean, like, every little bit counts. Well, I mean, when you look at, you know, top level athletes, it's not like you see Usain Bolt finish in like 9.8 seconds and then the second place person finishes in like 12 seconds. Like, he's beating him by like hundredths of a second. Like, when you get to those, like, top level, we're not even talking about like one percentage point away from each other. So all these, like, little benefits you can get here or there, all those add up, and those can be the difference between a AAA baseball player and, you know, Mike Trout.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I had to think really hard for a baseball player right there. Damn, what happened to baseball?
Oh, people love baseball. It's never been my sport, but yeah. But the reason why buffers are so important and they're built into just our body is because, and especially when it comes to athletic performance, is when you work out, you're burning a lot of ATP. There's no doubt about it. That's our body's energy source. And every time hydrolysis ATP, you break ATP to make ADP, you release a hydrogen ion. And that buildup of hydrogen ions can impair performance. So it can inhibit enzymes in aerobic and anaerobic ATP production. And it also hinders muscle contractile process by kind of competing with calcium binding sites on troponin. And that may seem kind of complicated, but if you remember last week's podcast talking about magnesium and calcium, calcium's like the on switch. So our body will release calcium into the muscle cells, and that'll cause our muscles to contract. And the more calcium that's around those muscles, the harder and stronger that muscle will contract. So if something is... I think it's called competitive inhibition. If they're competing with those binding sites, like hydrogen is, less calcium binds and the muscle contracts less. And obviously over time, if you're doing a dumbbell curl with 80-pound dumbbells, you need all the muscle cells you got to fire if you're going to curl that. So once those hydrogen ions, once that concentration gets higher and higher, your performance decreases.
Yeah, and like the pH value in our body like, that's a very sensitive area. Like, our body can only enzymes are can only operate within like a certain pH, and that's going to differ between like what tissue you're in. But it's very easy to get those enzymes either not functioning optimally or just not function at all if that pH gets either tilted one way or the other too far. So it's very important on keeping that pH value right in that Goldilocks zone, or you're just going to start losing function. And once you start losing function, that's when you either run out of gas or just, you know, something else is going to fall apart.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, talking about buffers and hydrogen ions might seem a little technical to some, or might seem a little abstract, but I'm sure most people have heard of lactic acid. And I think the science behind lactic acid is changing. I don't know if that is specifically written in stone. Actually, I know it's not. But let's not talk about lactic acid specifically. Let's talk about lactate. So that in our body is a buffer. And what that does, a buffer pretty much neutralizes something. So acidity causes pH to drop. A buffer will kind of raise that back up. It will prevent the pH from dropping. And like Tom just said, our body is designed to work in a very narrow pH range. So once it gets a little high or a little low, things kind of go to shit. So we have buffers there to keep us in line. And one of our body's main one is lactate. And all lactate is, people wonder what that is a product of glycolysis, or I guess the product of glycolysis is pyruvate. So pyruvate kind of just is in the muscle cell. That's anaerobic, so our body doesn't need oxygen to produce it. And in a situation where we're producing a lot of hydrogen ions, like working out, pyruvate will pick up a hydrogen ion and turn into lactate. That's all lactate is. It's pyruvate with a hydrogen ion attached.
Yeah, so that's lowering the pH. That's not increasing it. So that lactic acid argument with lactate, that's kind of like where we're a little bit confused on it. Let's not go into that too much further. Like, well, yeah, lactate's decreasing the pH, not increasing it, so it's not acting as a acid.
Yeah, but by decreasing pH is more acidic, so it doesn't decrease. Lactate doesn't decrease pH.
Lactate makes the system more basic.
Yeah, increasing pH.
Okay, yeah, let me say it that way. The whole pH value, it confuses me.
It does. It is an inverse relationship, so when something says high, you think it's low, vice versa. I know. It's easy to get that backed up.
Yeah, I get that mixed up all the time.
Yeah.
So is that all you wanted to say about carnosine, or did you want to go into that a little bit more?
Well, just that carnosine is a buffer, and I know in our muscle specifically, which is what we're really talking about for benefits, the buffering capacity, about 40% of it is from carnosine. So it's not like a little percentage. Like, it's a big percentage in our muscle comes from carnosine. So it does provide a real benefit.
That buffering effect is very important if you're doing any sort of, pretty much any sort of exercise that's going to last more than, you know, 10 seconds. Like, if you're doing one sprint, it doesn't really matter. But if you're going to be playing a game of basketball, yeah, you really need to be dealing with that. You really want to increase your lactate threshold, which is what you're talking about, that your body's ability to buffer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so any sort of endurance type of sport is really going to help out with that.
Just weightlifting is good too.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much anything that's longer than a 10-second sprint, you're going to need that benefit from. Mm-hmm. So that's going to help out with almost every single athlete out there.
And also, there is, I want to touch on, another substance that you're only going to find in meat that is beneficial from a performance standpoint is creatine. And we did a deep dive on creatine a few weeks back. I'll link to that podcast in the show notes. But there are studies out there showing a synergistic effect between beta-alanine and creatine. They kind of go hand in hand. And that honestly makes perfect sense. If you think about all the sources of all the sources of carnosine we get are from meat. And you know what's in meat as well as creatine. So of course our body is designed to use these two in tandem to increase our performance. It just makes sense.
Oh, I mean, completely. Like, why would we need to go and search, like, find some spinach and then go find some almonds that are going to be hundreds of miles away from each other on different plants to get the benefit? They should be in one source because that's the way our ancestors would have been eating it. And then just to go along with the creatine, so like we talked about this a couple weeks ago, you want to be supplementing with like 5 to 10 grams, somewhere around there, depending on your body type and your activity level. So that's about 2 pounds of beef is about 5 grams. So if you're eating a carnivore diet, I do 2 pounds of beef, no problem. Sometimes even more than that. So I am supplementing with creatine just by being on a carnivore diet.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a huge benefit. And just think, I understand eating meat. Some people think it is expensive, and it is. If you don't eat the way I do with organ meats and ground meat, it can be expensive. But if you're the type of person who buys supplements, if you spend $30, $50, $100 a month on supplements, you can cut out a bulk of those just by switching to an all-meat diet. You won't need them. You'll get them in a super bioavailable, healthy form from your foods.
One of our very first clients, I think we started saving him close to like $100, $150 a month just by telling him, like, hey, all the supplements that you're taking, we'll get you better forms of everything just from your diet.
Yeah, and he got great results. He's way healthier today than he was when he started with us.
Yeah, and one thing he was saying is, like, his workouts at the beginning kind of, like, tailed off. But, like, after a week or two of just getting that reintroduction of all these, you know, super bioavailable sources, giving him actual good amino acids that his body can use. He said his workouts were so much better after that. He just had that, like, 1 to 2 week adaptation phase. After that, no problems.
And there are some studies out there, I'm just going to touch on them because they're just super long, but the supplementation with beta-alanine, and again, beta-alanine, you can think of a precursor of carnosine and some of the benefits. So wrestlers and football players, they've been studies on them. They put on lean muscle compared to a placebo group. They increased buffering on another study, which is something I talked about. So there are studies out there showing, like, legit benefits from these supplements.
That's a pretty big increase. I mean, that's almost 100% more lean body mass increase in the football study that you linked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I completely agree that it's that big of a difference. I don't know if it's going to make you gain twice as much muscle in the same amount of time. That seems a bit far-fetched to me.
Yeah, we're talking 1 pound or 2 pounds, by the way. 100% sounds like a ton, but we're not talking about a lot of muscle in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about trained individuals,
it's hard to put on muscle.
Yeah. Which this study involved.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's putting on 2 pounds of muscles in a study is pretty damn good. I don't know how you really do that. I wish I could put on 2 pounds of muscle.
Well, I genuinely feel like I put on more muscle these past few years on this plan than I have in the bulk of my life prior to this. I do.
Pretty much every single amino acid is going to have some sort of athletic, like, benefit to it. And we will go into more depth on things like, we already did creatine. We'll discuss glutamine. Glutamine is another great source that you can get from meat. So if you're looking at, like, a 1 pound steak, you're looking at like 20 grams of glutamine, like 15 to 20 grams of glutamine, which is more than you would be getting in most supplements. So yeah, you can go spend some money on glutamine, or you could just eat a delicious steak. I'm willing to bet the steak's going to taste better than that glutamine, and it's going to be more bioavailable. So that's just like another amino acid. L-arginine, that list can keep going on and on. Some of the other more beneficial amino acids, some of the more well-studied ones, will actually just do individual podcasts on, especially glutamine and arginine. I don't want to just say, like, the benefits of carnivore diet are strictly on carnosine and methionine, but those are just two that we wanted to touch on.
Well, all right, well, that's another, I guess, episode done as far as the topic. That's some benefits for meat and protein and the carnivore diet. We both love it. We both recommend it. Let's finish the podcast with a tip of the week.
All right, so my tip of the week is mostly going to go out to runners, but anybody can use this information. So one thing that I found through running, especially a lot, is if you are somebody that runs a lot outside, you're going to run through your shoes relatively quick. A good pair of running shoes has about 100 miles on them. So once you run through that 100 miles, you pretty much need to get a new pair of running shoes. So one problem that you can come across is, this is mostly if you're going to buy, like, say you're buying a pair of Nikes, but they're not, like, the Free Runs or the Flexes. They're just some, like, random style that they only come out with one time. Well, if you really like that style, but they only made it one time, by the time those shoes run out and you try to go buy them, you're not going to be able to find them. So one thing that I really like to suggest is, like, if you find a pair of running shoes that you like, buy multiple pairs. Buy like 3 or 4 or 5 pairs, as many as you can in your size, because there's a good chance that you're never going to be able to find them again. Or another way around it is to just find a running shoe that's a popular style that you know that they're always going to be making more of. So, like, for example, I use the Nike Flexes to run in. I really like them. If they discontinue the style that I have, I can buy the season before, I can buy a new one. I think I have the 7s, they have the 8s, they'll come out with the 9s, they'll come out with the 10s. I'm not worried. I can just keep buying those styles. Because when you switch from one type of running shoe to another one, you start having, I mean, your biomechanics are going to be slightly off. And when you're running 10 miles, your bad mechanics can really, you know, lead to shin splints, ankle issues, knee issues, back, shoulder, hip, you know, just everything. So, like, once you find a piece of equipment that you like, don't be afraid to just buy a bunch of them or try to find something that you know they're always going to be reproducing.
Yeah, that might be hard, you know, buying 5 pairs at the time, but just think of it as an investment in the future. You know, that $500 bill that day is going to be worth it over the course of, you know, the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't like the most financially practical tip, but it's definitely something, especially if you're a runner, you're going to be buying new running shoes every 2 or 3 months anyway. So it's really not that bad because you're going to be having to do it. And you could also, hey, you buy a new pair of running shoes, you start running in those, you have another backup pair, you can start walking and kind of break them in a little bit before you start running in them, too. Like, you know, there's a little couple other tricks you can use as well.
Yeah, and but also, yeah, if your shoe's ever on sale, buy multiple pairs then as well. All right, that's another episode in the books. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. You can email us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition@gmail.com. We're online. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So reach out if you have any questions, comments, or concerns.
Yeah, please subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already done so. Please rate and review us as well. That's how new people can come and find us. And just so we get to have your feedback and know what you like, what you don't like. Hopefully there's a lot more that you like about our podcast than what you don't. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.